Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Woods, your host, and I'm happy to have you join us today for today's program. One of the problems that's plaguing the church, we all know about it, and we don't want to talk about it, but we all know it's there, is the problem of addiction, but even more specifically than that, sexual addiction. We live in a culture that's saturated with sexual matters, sexual stimulation, and it's a problem in the church. And it's one that we don't really want to talk about, but we have to. And that's our guest today. Our guest is a pastor. His name is Tom Ryan. He wrote the book, Ashamed No More, and he's going to tell us his story of his enslavement and how the gospel has set him free. Tom, glad to have you on Peace Talk today.
Larry, thanks for having me on the program. I really appreciate it.
And I just want you to know right from the beginning, we all know that this is a courageous thing. And of course, I mean, you've already put your story in a book. It's already out there. But to come in and talk about it and to offer your story as hope and help and hopefully peace to others, I want to appreciate that and thank you for taking the time to do it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Tell us a little bit about you. Let's let our audience understand who you were. You were a pastor. Tell us a little bit about your ministry and you know, just so that we kind of understand, married, father, children, all of that sort of thing.
Right. I grew up a Midwestern fellow, and I was educated in seminaries on both coasts and served in two different Presbyterian denominations. Planted a church that I pastored almost 20 years, have been married for almost 35 years now, and we have four grown children. So that's a little bit about me. Along the lines of growing up, I grew up in a mainline Presbyterian church, but somewhere in my adolescence, had some really significant interactions with the Holy Spirit, with the gospel, with Jesus coming alive and becoming very personal to me. And so a strong evangelical faith became a part of my consciousness. But what I didn't know, Larry, or didn't recognize, was that I'd also stumbled into compulsive sexual lusting and self-gratification, and that became kind of a staple of my coping with my emotional life. And I didn't have the tools to think about that or to see that the right way. I just felt guilty and ashamed about that. But as so many of us back in those days, when we were young men growing up, we thought that, well, once you get married, those problems all take care of themselves. They all go away. And I married a wonderful woman. We were fairly young when we got married. It was pre-seminary years. And we had a good life together. We have a good life together, but it didn't go away. I had stumbled into compulsive sexual lusting and gratification, and it took on a life of its own in me, and so the war ensued.
And from all outward appearances, you were a successful pastor.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
I think you even made the comment in your book where you had not only, I mean, you, when I say successful, you had ministered to people. You'd been a help to people.
Yeah, I got a lot of very good feedback, and I had a robust congregation, good folks. It was a privilege to be in ministry with them, and we did a lot of really good things in the church that I was able to pastor for a long time, which, of course, adds to the sense of shame that I had at living a secret life and the guilt, and still to this day, the remorse of having to walk away from it and of hurt that I've caused others. I do have genuine remorse about those things. But yes, you're right. We had some wonderful ministry that we were able to participate in.
You made a comment earlier in the interview that this sexual addiction, this compulsive lifestyle, came as a response to being unable to cope with the emotional things. Tell us a little bit more about that.
In my case, going back and looking at it now, I had suffered some things growing up that created some imbalances in my own emotional life, and I didn't have language, bandwidth, understanding, or skills to cope or understand or deal with those things. And a lot of us have some kind of trauma. I mean, there's different ways that Christians stumble into compulsive sexual behaviors. For some of us, it's early childhood issues. For others of us, we come into it sideways. I've got a friend, Nate Larkin, who's written a wonderful book, Samson and the Pirate Monks, and Nate's seeds, I think he would say, of his struggle came in childhood, but the introduction of compulsive sexual behavior didn't really come until adulthood. We find our ways to this life in different ways. For me, it was early on.
One of the things that I found very interesting about your book, you mentioned the concept of choice, and you call this compulsive. That, yeah, I mean, many people believe that everything we do, we have absolute control of our choices. We make the decisions. And if we make a wrong choice, it's a wrong choice, we're responsible for it. But you didn't find that to be true, did you? You were compelled to engage in certain activities.
Well, that's a fascinating question. I mean, and because and it's multifaceted, I think, because on the one hand, yes, I'm responsible for my choices. I'm responsible for the choices that I make. We do have the privilege of making choices, and that's right. And so I try to be very careful in the way I wrote A Shame No More to own my stuff and to not say, well, this is somebody else's fault or I didn't have anything to do with this. No, Larry, this is my life. I sculpted it. I didn't know everything I was doing, but it was still my life. But now here's the problem with addiction. When we are human beings that struggle with a sin nature or an imperfect nature, it's like having a little monkey on our backs that plays with our hair and puts his paws over our ears and our eyes and is a little irritating and playful and whatever. But addiction is when the monkey becomes a gorilla and takes on a force within our lives of himself and takes us to places we do not want to go. That's where we lose will. We lose the freedom of choice. It takes on a life of its own in our souls. That's addiction.
And I guess that's what we're saying is when we get to that point, we, in fact, are losing control of many things.
Absolutely. We've lost control. In the 12 steps, the first step is to come to understand that we are powerless over sexually compulsive behavior and that our lives have become unmanageable. That doesn't mean that we don't have choices left to us. We do have choices. So I had the choice of, do I want to choose to work at recovery? Do I want to choose to cooperate with the Spirit of God? I had choices, and I still have choices every day that I get to make, I need to make. But when it comes to certain arenas where we've fallen vulnerable and become compulsive, there we have lost freedom. I cannot engage in lust anymore without losing control of my life. I don't have control there. Does that make sense?
It certainly does. And I remember listening to an evangelist on television one evening, and he made the comment, speaking to his congregation, and he said, you know, Satan is patient. And he said he planted seeds in your lives, many of you as children, that you didn't know how to deal with. You couldn't defend yourself. You did not know what was going on, what was happening to you. And those seeds are bringing fruit in your adulthood. Was that true? Was that kind of a situation of your, would that be your story?
I think that's a very good summary. I think that's very profound wisdom. Yeah.
Well, some other wisdom that I've been bumping into is the fact that here you're telling your story. Is telling your story part of your healing?
Well, that's a good question. In not of my healing, but it's a part of the responsibility of living a different life. When we do find bread, we need to go to others who are starving with the lack of bread. And that's a gospel principle. You know, when we find life, we need to share it with others. And the 12 steps teach that, and the 12 steps, so seek to take this message to others. So that's a part of an ongoing healthy life, the outgo of a spiritual transformation is to try and help others, not out of some kind of a superior thinking or I've arrived or I've achieved this and you can be like me, but rather here's a part of my journey and here's how I found hope and I want you to find hope as well.
You mentioned in this Secret Life a couple of items, and if you would go back over those, what were the consequences of this Secret Life, say, in terms of your relationships, in how you were processing life internally that nobody ever saw?
I struggled with tremendous shame and with a tremendous sense of personal dislike because there was this gross incongruity in what I believed a Christian ought to be, what I believed a pastor ought to be, and what I saw in my own soul. And for a number of years, of course, as I write in Ashamed No More, I struggle with that on my own, and then I began to finally break out of that bubble. Mine, mine was a particularly long course of getting through recovery to a place of sustained sobriety, and not everybody's course needs to be like that, I'm convinced. But I needed to break out of that isolation, and one of the consequences of me being isolated was that when I would, as I struggled with these things, I just continually felt like, well, I'm the only person who's this bad. I'm the only person like this. Or if other people knew what went on in my mind or what went on in my life, they would be disgusted. They would hate me. They would run away from me. All of these are lies that the enemy loves to propagate. He sows those seeds in our souls, and then he feeds them, and we believe them. And we see enough evidence in life around us, unfortunately, that kind of reinforces that. And so it makes us more fearful. And then the fearfulness, the terror of being isolated, the terror of not liking who we are and of feeling like we can't change this, reinforces, actually, the addiction. It's a tremendous mechanism of self-destruction.
And that, of course, is the bottom line of it, isn't it? This was self-destructive behavior.
Absolutely. That is the bottom line. It is all about the destruction. Addiction is always about the destruction of human life. Addiction is always the counter move to the grace and the mercy of God. Addiction is always about us grabbing a hold of something, trying to make life work and taking a shortcut and inadvertently creating a little sub-life within our own souls that wars against what God wants to do and ends up destroying us.
In your situation, now obviously you had the shame from what was taking place in your own life inside, but do you find that the church itself has a tendency to heap some of this shame on people, and that is part of the enslavement?
Yes, and I say that with hesitancy because, Larry, I want to be clear. I don't want to be critical of the church. Quite the contrary. I've given my life to serving the church, however imperfectly. I really love the church, and to this day have profound remorse of hurt that I've caused other believers, hurt that I've caused the church. So hear my words very, very carefully and cautiously, with great humility and with great reverence for the church. Yes, unfortunately, the way we approach sexuality increases the shame for people who struggle with their sexuality.
And that
we do that in a couple ways. One of the ways we do that is that in some parts of the church, we just don't even talk about sexuality. We don't give people the kind of adequate information they need on say, how sexuality works or how God's wired us. Just the profound message that sexuality is a part of who we are as God's creatures, that it's God who thought up masculinity and femininity, and these are wonderful aspects of humanity, and that in some way it represents how we're created in the image of God and reflects God's creation of us. And so the sex is a good thing, not a bad thing. People need to have specific information given to them about how it works and how sexual attachment works and gets formed and how can it be malattachments can be formed and what we need to do to address those and correct those in healthy, grace-based ways rather than in scolding, shame-based ways. Does that make sense?
It makes absolute sense. And Tom, we're going to come back to that. We have to take a break. When we come back, I want you to talk about the title of your book, Ashamed No More, and how God took away the shame of the secret life that Tom Ryan was living. So stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 minutes. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
On the next Handle on the Law.
A paralyzed man picks out a defendant in a lineup using only his ability to blink. You know, blink twice for no, three times for yes, that kind of thing. Surprisingly, there might be a problem with this method. I'll give you all the details about this case and plenty of marginal legal advice. So blink three times if you think you'll be following my advice.
Sunday night at 5 on Christian Talk 660.
May is American Stroke Month. Stroke, the nation's third leading cause of death, is treatable when recognized quickly. Successful treatment depends on prompt emergency care, usually within 3 hours of symptom onset. For information on stroke, visit radiologyinfo.org.
Before we rejoin today's program, let me say thank you for listening to Peace Talk. Each program comes with the prayer that you will find the peace that Jesus desires for you to enjoy today. But I'd like to take a minute to tell you about the website, peacetalk.com. Go to peacetalk.com and you'll discover that Peace Talk is more than teaching and great stories. We offer opportunities for bringing Peace Talk to you and your church. If you're caught in relationship-destroying conflict, at peacetalk.com you can access relationship-restoring services. You will also find seminar retreat opportunities for your group. And at peacetalk.com you can read the blog and sign up for our free email newsletter, Peace Mail. Follow us on Peace Talk and Twitter. And please, don't overlook the donate button, because Peace Talk needs your help. Peace Talk is all about you finding peace. Let's rejoin our program, and remember, Peace Talk is your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. This is Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace. I'm Larry Wood, your host, and we're glad to have you with us. If you stuck with us through the break, glad to have you back. If you're just joining us, you don't know that our guest has been Tom Ryan, the author of the book Ashamed No More, and he's telling the story of the secret life that he lived as a pastor, trapped in sexual addiction. And so, Tom, let's pick it up right there. The name of the book is Ashamed No More. Why that title, and how is it that God took away your shame?
Right. Well, actually, InterVarsity Press titled the book. When I wrote the manuscript and submitted it to them, I titled it Shame No More, kind of as an admonition, let's not shame each other anymore, let's drop shame, or let's identify how shame is a tool of the enemy, and it does not help us move towards the grace and mercy and peace that Jesus wants all of us to have. And they put a little bit more of a memoir feel to it, called it Ashamed No More. So that I'm so grateful that InterVarsity published this book. I mean, my goodness, and I'm so grateful for my editor there, Dave Zimmerman, did a great job helping me shape it in a healthy way. The only thing I picked on the whole book was my name. I used T.C. Ryan because there's so many Tom Ryans in the world. So, yeah, your listeners can find it under T.C. Ryan. But God did remove shame and is removing shame. There are days when I think that I'm still, you know, succumb to some sense of self-loathing or shame. In fact, my wife and I were on a walk 2 weeks ago. We were talking about an event that had come up. Something had happened, and I said, you know, that book title, Ashamed No More, Pam, I still am struggling with shame. And she said, but that's something you can talk about to others, because you know how others are struggling with that, and you know how the Lord wants to free us of that, and that's part of the journey. Now, in coming clean, in coming to, and clean, that's really not a word that I want to use, because that has a once-for-all sound. Recovery is a process, and discovering the hope that Jesus has and the peace that the Holy Spirit really will bring about in our souls is all a process. It's not a neat, done thing once for all, but it comes out of a lot of work, and it comes out of dealing with the fact that we have a tendency to isolate, and particularly when we've been hurt, and particularly when we have engaged in things that we don't respect in ourselves, we tend to hide. We've been doing that since the time of the Garden of Eden. We have a tendency to hide, and it's counterintuitive to us, but the way in which we find our freedom in Christ is in coming out of that hiding. We've got to be careful about how we do it. We've got to be careful who we do it with. But we do have to come out of hiding and engage others.
I take it that in the first half you mentioned that part of the problem was your isolation. So your separation from the community was part of the enslavement. Are you telling me now that community is essential to coming out and to finding the peace in the loss of shame?
Absolutely, yeah. Community is a huge piece of that, and it's an interesting dynamic, because in the one sense I was very well connected with people. I was a part of ministerial groups, and I was very involved with the people in my ministry path and in my church. I cared greatly about people. All the ministry that I did, I tried to do with integrity, and I really cared about how I approached it. I was involved with others. I was involved in their spiritual lives. But there was this whole part of me that I have for a long time tried to deal with on my own. As I write in Ashamed No More, when I was a very young man, I had a couple of different conversations where I tried to talk to somebody, but I noticed that they were uncomfortable talking about sex, and so I just shut down. I just pulled back. I just used that as an excuse to say, well, then I need to solve this on my own. Jesus and I will fix this. Well, there are some things that we cannot do without God, but there are other things that God won't do without us and without us getting involved with others, without us giving away a part of ourselves to others. We have to do it in community because that's how God has made us.
During the time of your ministry, no doubt you tried many times to overcome this, and apparently those all ended in failure. Why was that?
Well, that's a great question. I did try repeatedly to overcome this, and in some senses, I made a lot of progress during those years. I never got to sustain sobriety, and I did end up imploding. I ended up not resolving it, and I got myself in and I write about this very candidly in the book. I got arrested. I resigned my church position. It's really a horrible way to wrap up. I don't recommend this to other clergy. Get help. Do what you need, and if you have to, get out beforehand. Don't do this to yourself. There were particular wrinkles in my own particular story, and I really believe, Larry, that I had to get out of ministry before I was going to get the kind of psychological help I needed to get to unpack the hidden cues that were so buried in my soul from childhood. That's not going to be the case with everybody. Everybody's story is a little bit different because the Lord loves diversity and he loves different stories. So the point would be that you've got to figure out what is it that has gotten you where you are and what is it the Lord wants you to do to get out of where you are and use the tools that the Lord has. And that includes healthy Christians, sometimes professional help. It includes others. It includes getting out of your own mind and head.
Tom, we're talking about the subject of sexual addiction, but as a pastor, you work with people of all sorts of addictions. Is there a commonality in the question of addiction so that if a person is hearing your story, but their issue is not sexual addiction, they can still learn from your story?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I wrote Ashamed No More to talk as much about spiritual transformation in this culture as anything else. Hopefully it's the kind of book, and in fact I'm getting this feedback from a lot of people that, well, sex isn't my thing, but I've struggled with shame, or I've struggled with this, or I've struggled with that, and I found your book really, really helpful, or some of the things that you found in mindfulness practice, or in just the way you unpack the 12 steps has been very, very helpful. At the end of the day, addictions is usually about some kind of an intimacy issue, some kind of a shortcut. Somehow, we're managing life by taking a shortcut, and it takes on a life of its own in our souls, and then we can't shake it. We can't break it. Sometimes we can manage it for periods. We can go cold turkey for a while, but we end up coming back to something that costs us, something that robs us of freedom, something that creates consequences, something that abridges our ability to be growing, integrated people. That's what addiction does. And it comes in all kinds of forms because I think it's Bill Hybels that used the phrase, we're an addiction-prone culture. It might be somebody else, but we are an addiction-prone culture. And you're seeing this more and more. It's not just about sex, but sex is so personal and so powerful that it really is an epidemic. As Newsweek magazine called it last fall, it's an epidemic, sex addiction is, in this culture.
There was a church that I'm aware of that did a program, and they called it, we are wired for addiction. But what they were trying to say is we were wired to worship God, and that worship is being transferred to something else. And the fact that we are wired to worship God with a great passion is where we get diverted into some of these other things when we let that get perverted into addictions. What would you say to that concept?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think that's precisely right. That God's to be our primary attachment. And the human condition is such that we're stumbling into malattachments, to other attachments, of things that get in the way of that primary attachment. Now, what's great about that church offering that program is giving church people the permission to think in terms of the ways of how is it that something has encroached its way into my life that has gotten in the way. Too often in conservative Christianity, we get this idea that, well, once you believe in Jesus, once you surrender your life, once the Holy Spirit's come in, well, then it's the victorious Christian life, and it's just onward and upward into a steady progression. Well, it isn't. Sometimes we go sideways. Sometimes we go backwards. And that's where we really have to pick up the spirit of Galatians 6 and help each other and encourage each other. And we can't let things like shame get in the way and hiding become an activity that we engage in, because we do need help in terms of sorting out these malattachments that get in the way and rob us of God being our primary attachment.
We're down to the end of the program, Tom, and so I'd like you to take just a minute or two and speak directly to the audience. If there's someone trapped in a sexual addiction or any addiction, what would be your message to them? What do you want to take away from this interview today?
If any sister or brother listening to this is struggling with compulsive sexual behavior, I want you to know you are not alone. You've got so many brothers and sisters that struggle with this too. Secondly, your Father in heaven is not ashamed of you. Your sexuality is a gift. Something's happened to it. It's gotten bent, but it can be solved. It can be straightened out. You will need help. You will need others, but God will help you. God has not turned his back on you. You have a problem, but you are not the problem. Press on.
What would be step one to that person?
Step one is admitting, I've got something that I'm not handling well on my own. I can't beat this on my own. And that's a step we have to come back to over and over. We have to keep reviewing that to ourselves and say, no, I am not able to handle this on my own, because the enemy will always lie to us and always try and push us back into isolation. Remember, the enemy from the time of the Garden of Eden has always planted doubts and asked the question, well, did God really say that? Do you really need to do that? Can't you really do whatever you want? And now, step one is always, this is out of my control. I can't handle it on my own. I need others to help me.
Our guest today has been Tom Ryan, author of the book, Ashamed No More. Tom is telling the story of his escape from sexual addiction and the ongoing process, as he said, of staying clean, of getting away from it. Tom, thank you. You have been a great blessing to our audience. We're going to continue this conversation at another time, because I think you have a whole lot more to tell the Peace Talk audience. But do take Tom's advice. If you're caught, take step one. Admit it. There's a problem that you're not handling very well, but there's a loving God whose grace is not ashamed of you. His Son died for you, and he has forgiveness, and he has a cleansing available for you. Thank you for listening to Peace Talk today. Our guest has been Tom Ryan. Join us again next time for Peace Talk, your place to find hope, get help, and discover peace.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or Clear Channel Communications.